Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Good evening. You are listening to Trans Positive here on KBOO Community Radio. My name is Emma, and I use she and her pronouns.
And my name is Nicolette, and I use A&M pronouns.
So we're here tonight. We're recording on Zoom because it's COVID-19, and KBOO is still closed, so we're doing everything on Zoom. Tonight, we're going to be talking about trans in the news, and then Nicolette has got some really great stuff to share with us from something that they're working. So let's go ahead and get started. Let's start by talking about trans in the news.
Yeah, so I think the most pressing thing to talk about, I know everyone's protesting because of George Floyd's death from last week, but another death that occurred last week that I think is really important to talk about, and I haven't seen discussed a whole lot, is Tony McDade. He was a Black trans man that was shot and killed by a police officer. I think it's really important to talk about this, especially when queer and trans people also have a very high disproportionate rate of being arrested, incarcerated, and killed by police, just like people of color do. And especially for Black trans people, you know, any encounter with police is very dangerous.
Do you know what the person's name was?
Yeah, it was Tony McDade. And there was another person, I can't find the article that was shared with me now. I think it was deleted. So I don't know this person's name, but there was another article about a trans woman who is incarcerated right now, and she's concerned that she might not even survive her sentence because she has HIV, so she's immunocompromised, and she's in close proximity in this men's prison with these prisoners that are coming in and out who could potentially be infected with COVID. So, you know, she's at very high risk, and it really goes to show, I mean, prisoners in general are not being treated very well, and they are at high risk right now.
Yeah, that's a huge issue. It's just like the whole issue of people who are immunocompromised, who are trans and queer, and like being stuck in prison, and it's like they're immunocompromised and they're traumatized, because when you're queer and you're incarcerated, it's really a source, it can totally be a source of stress and trauma. And then on top of that, now there's this like crazy infectious disease that you can catch just by breathing.
Right.
And you're in the worst place. I mean, the governor hasn't released anyone hardly. And it's just, I think it's really a shame. I mean, you know, I did a program on Prison Pipeline about this last week. We talked to Alice Lindell from the Oregon Justice Resource Center. And it's like the governor has only released two people, and there's 14,000 people. And if they wanted to achieve true social distancing, they would have to release 60% of the people who are incarcerated right now, which, you know, maybe they should maybe release nonviolent people.
I think so too. And you know, this reminds me too, just last week actually in my queer studies class, we watched this documentary about C.C. McDonald.
C.C. McDonald, yeah.
Yeah, and I think she's another example of this injustice against queer and trans people, because, you know, she was another trans woman of color who was incarcerated for defending herself when she was attacked by a white man, because, you know, because she was black and trans, she was basically painted as a villain who murdered this man when she was just defending herself.
Yeah, from Minnesota.
Yeah, from Minnesota. She, you know, just accidentally killed him in self-defense. It wasn't intentional or anything, but they first tried to charge her with murder, and like they ended up like incarcerating her in solitary. So
yeah, she was incarcerated for a long time.
Yeah, she did finally, I think she got out in 2014, but she reduced her sentence from like 40 years to 40 months by eventually working down to a plea deal where she pleaded guilty to homicide, which she shouldn't have even had to do. She was just defending herself.
Right, she was defending herself from a Nazi.
Yeah, he literally had a swastika tattooed on his chest, and yet people were sympathizing with her attacker.
Yeah, a neo-Nazi with a Nazi symbol on his head, and a black trans queer woman of color.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah. So I thought that was just important to talk about this week. Is there anything else you wanted to address before I move on?
No. I mean, it's the 1 year anniversary of. There was one other thing to talk about. So last week we did a show, and it was a really great show. And I wanted to talk about it again because it's so significant. It was about the case of Adri Edmo. And Adri Edmo is a trans woman who is incarcerated. She is BIPOC. She is of a Native ancestry from a tribe in Idaho, occupied indigenous land. And she's been incarcerated since 2012, and she was trying to get gender affirming surgery, and she actually harmed herself twice along the way. But her request to get gender affirming surgery was denied by like somebody, and it went all the way to the Idaho Supreme Court. And the Idaho Supreme Court ruled in her favor. And then the governor of Idaho tried to stop it. And he said he was going to take it to the Supreme Court. So 2 weeks ago, it went to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court upheld the decision that Adri Edmo, a transgender woman incarcerated in a men's prison, deserves medically necessary treatment for being transgender, which in this case is gender-affirming surgery.
So, oh, that's great.
Yeah, that was a big win. It was really, like, I think it's something that, you know, because of what's happening right now with other more pressing social justice issues like racism and police brutality,
right,
it kind of like slipped through, but it was a really big victory in the trans community because it affirms the right of transgender people who are incarcerated to have medically necessary treatment to like help, you know, I can't remember what the exact psychological terms are, to like diminish their gender dysphoria, I think is the word.
Yeah. And that definitely is huge, and we may see the effects of that in the future. I hadn't even heard about it yet, but that is probably because with everything else going on, you know, there hasn't been a whole lot of talk about that. Like I said, Tony McDade hasn't even been talked about a whole lot because he happened to die just 2 days after George Floyd did. Wow. And so everyone's talking about George Floyd.
Yeah. But he's a transgender man, so we talk about it. Yeah. Wow. Well, thanks for sharing that, Nicolette.
Yeah. Oh, I guess one thing to lighten things up before we move on, it is Pride Month, so I want to wish everyone a happy Pride.
Happy Pride, yeah, I know. Like, in between this show and the next show would normally be the Pride Festival. Like, normally we'd have, like, someone from Northwest Pride down, and or maybe even a couple of people, and we'd be talking about, like, who's going to be in the Pride Parade? Who's leading the Pride Parade? When is the Trans Pride Parade? You know, and it's like, now it's just like, blah.
It's a shame that's not happening this year, but hopefully next year, you know?
Yeah, it is kind of a shame. I mean, especially when you think about, like, you know, like, this, by the time this airs, it'll be a little bit out. But, like, just this week when we're recording, there were, like, 3 massive demonstrations downtown against police brutality and racism. Mm-hmm. And there was, like, at least 10 to 15,000 people in each march. And
Like,
you know, I mean, if they can do a march because of an injustice, why can't we do a march to celebrate? You know, I mean, I mean, if everybody's socially distanced and we all wore masks, it seems like we could have a Pride Festival. But on the other hand, it's really important to protect everyone who is immunocompromised. So
that is very true. And like, you know, I was talking about this with my friends earlier. I wish I could go join in the protest, but I'm immunocompromised. I just can't risk it. You know, I'm staying home as much as I possibly can because I'm very vulnerable if I do get infected.
Yeah, and it's kind of the same with the Pride Festival. I mean, it's really important to protect people who are immunocompromised, and really, though, to protect everyone. So I guess just, you know, we'll just wait till next year.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to make sure that next year is just twice as awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we'll make up for it.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, so what's going on, Nicolette? I know that you've been really busy working on stuff, you know, and you've been doing a lot of research.
Yeah, so I just did this big final paper for my queer studies class on trans representation in the media. And ooh. I thought that would be a great topic to discuss here tonight.
Oh, that's going to be great. Yeah, I remember when Will and Grace first came out. And
exactly.
It's like we had the one of the writers for Will and Grace came up to speak about 5 years ago.
Oh, wow.
In Portland. And so we went to hear her speak. And, you know, she just talked about how, you know, what it was like writing back in the 90s for a queer character on television. So, you know, like whenever I think of what you're talking about, that's like the first thing I think of. So that's so cool. Well, I can't wait to hear what you like did research on. So why don't you just start, you know, share what you've done. And if you don't mind, I'll ask you questions along the way.
Yeah, you can, you know, feel free to give me your commentary or ask questions. This is like a 5-page paper. So
yeah.
I'll try and get through it all. Okay. So
but we're talking, before you do start though, let me just do a station ID. This is KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. And you are listening to Trans Positive, a show that uplifts the voices of transgender and non-binary people. And you're listening tonight to Emma and Nicolette, and we're talking about trans representation in the media. So take it away, Nicolette.
All right. So in recent decades, it has been found that seeing LGBT characters normalized on television and in movies allows viewers to see LGBT people as human and relatable. Former Vice President Joe Biden has been quoted as saying, "I think Will and Grace probably did more to educate the American public than almost anybody's ever done so far." Mm-hmm. According to a 2012 poll by The Hollywood Reporter, 27% of respondents said that shows with LGBT characters, such as Modern Family and Glee, helped influence them to support same-sex marriage, as well as 34% saying they changed their views based on seeing LGBT people on television.
Wow, this is why the radical right is so scared of us right now.
Oh, yeah. Really,
they're, you know, it's like, everybody's kind of afraid of the right now, but they really shouldn't be. I mean, if these protests, like, have shown us anything, and if, like, the fact that we're sitting here talking on the radio tells you anything, it's that we're actually on the winning side and they're playing defense because they're afraid of what's happening, you know, because, I mean, what you just said. So, I mean, that's great. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no problem. Also 29% saying they changed their views after seeing them in movies. Anyway, so LGBT representation in media is essential to the equal rights movement. And in the past few years, representation of transgender people has grown more rapid. However, while trans representation in media is important to the transgender rights movement, progress is not linear. Despite increase in representation, it may still be at least several years or more before significant progress is made in the social acceptance of trans people.
I mean, you know, like when I think about trans parents, for instance, mm-hmm. like I think about this program that was on Netflix that, you know, it ended problematically because of Me Too, but it was a program that was representing like transgender characters in the media. But even though it was just like 2 years ago, even though it was written by a queer woman whose father was transgender, I can't remember if Jill Soloway called her parent her father or her mother, but even though it was written by a queer woman about her trans or their trans parent, I'm not sure what Jill Soloway's pronouns are, it was still played by a straight actor, you know?
Right.
And it's not that Jeffrey Tanborn doesn't do a good job. I mean, he's a great actor, but you know, why can't we have a trans person play a trans person, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, and I wrote about that quite a bit in this paper, actually.
Oh, great. I'm sorry. I keep on interrupting you.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I do welcome commentary and questions, you know, especially mm-hmm. since it'll probably help me with the final draft. Mm-hmm. Anyway, trans people may be more visible now, but they are still facing the same problems. They are still largely dealing with public harassment, employment discrimination, denied access to health care, and more. Transgender athletes are having a difficult time being allowed to compete in sports.
Could we say again just those things you said just a minute ago were like so significant. You said that transgender people face job discrimination. What else?
Public harassment, denied uh-huh. access to health care. Trans athletes are having a hard time competing in sports.
Public harassment, job discrimination, and difficulty with healthcare.
Yeah.
I mean, those three things, like imagine if you, that was your life, you're listening to this radio show, imagine if that was your life, and your life was, you constantly face job discrimination, you constantly mm-hmm. face public harassment, and you face difficulty in accessing healthcare. And imagine if that was your life. I mean, that is like, what you're saying right there is just so significant in terms of the kind of discrimination transgender people have to face.
Exactly. And on top of that, 39% of Americans are in favor of transphobic laws such as denying trans people access to the bathrooms they are most comfortable in. Mm-hmm. And even on the left, trans people are still having a hard time being accepted, as 30% of Democrats are in favor of anti-trans bathroom legislation. The increase in visibility could also be potentially leading to an increase in violence, as the murder rate of transgender people has been increasing since 2015. Part of what could be affecting the way society views trans people is not just an increase in visibility of trans people and issues, but also specifically how these people and issues are portrayed in the media, particularly in works of fiction.
Yeah. I mean, the media, like, really... I mean, I don't understand this whole, the whole bathroom thing. It's like, yeah, it's the bathroom, for God's sake. I mean, what? You're just... It's like the, I mean, it's like the last place in the world that I would be worried about, you know, what's going on. It's just, it's like, I mean, who wants to even think about bathrooms? You know, it's like, you just want to go use the bathroom, wash your hands and leave. It's like, why is this such a big obsession with a certain minority of people? And you're saying it's because of trans representation in the media in part.
Well, not solely because of that. I think no. It is a contributing factor. But yeah. I think, you know, a lot of it just has to do with myths that are spread around us that, like, we're sexual predators and things like that, when it has nothing to do with sexual desire or anything like that, you know.
Isn't it interesting how, like, fears, like, those kind of fears, like, even those fears are rooted in patriarchy, because right. There's never any talk about, like, you know, sexual, like, trans masculine sexual predators going into, like, male bathrooms. Like, nobody's yeah. worried about trans men using the bathroom. They're just worried. I mean, I shouldn't say that. Never mind. I shouldn't say that, because I know that discrimination, we just talked about a trans man who just got murdered. So right. We know what happens. But I think that what most people think about when they think about trans people using the bathroom is they think about trans women using a women's bathroom.
Yeah, they always just picture it as, like, a man who's trying to creep on women. If a man wants to go be a pervert, he can just walk into the women's restroom without, you know, dressing as a woman. Mm-hmm. There's no increased risk just because trans women are using the bathroom. Right. They're just going to go use the bathroom like everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's just discrimination. It reflects the kind of hatred that, like, a certain portion of society has against transgender people.
Exactly. So, anyway, there are a number of reasons why it's important to cast trans actors in movies and television. One reason is that these marginalized people have a hard enough time finding work as is. But another is that it allows audiences to see real trans people in relatable roles. Angelica Ross recently became the first trans actor to secure 2 series regular roles on television, playing a trans woman on the show Pose and, more interestingly, a cisgender woman on the show American Horror Story.
Oh, that's so cool. A trans woman playing a cisgender woman. That's so cool.
Right? That is awesome.
Yay.
Yeah. So, yeah, when casting an actor to play a trans person, it is most appropriate to cast a trans actor who can better relate to and more accurately portray that character than any cis person would. And what is particularly progressive, though, about having a trans woman play a cis woman is it shows to audiences that trans women are real women. American Horror Story also cast Chaz Bono, a trans man, in the role of a cis man on the show, likewise showing that trans men are real men.
I don't think I saw American Horror Story. I'm such an old fuddy-duddy.
I actually haven't watched it myself yet. I really need to get around to it. All my friends are telling me I need to watch it, but I have been reading about the trans actors that are on the show, and they're playing cis characters, which I think is really cool.
Oh, cool. I'll put it in my Netflix feed.
Yeah, I'm going to get around to it this summer when I'm not in school, finally. Mm-hmm. So, another famous trans actress is Laverne Cox, best known for playing a trans woman on Orange is the New Black.
Oh my gosh, Laverne Cox. I love Laverne Cox.
Right? Everyone loves Laverne Cox.
She's so great. I mean, I remember the first year of Orange is the New Black. That was really her big year. Like, mm-hmm. I've seen all 7 seasons. Like, season 6, oh my God, what a train wreck. Season 6 was like maybe it wasn't season 6, but it was like the one before the last season was just like a total train wreck. But the last season actually was really good. It kind of reclaimed the series. But Laverne Cox was just so great, especially in season one. She was just like, you know, that was such a big deal. Oh my gosh, that was such a big deal.
Yeah.
And they told her whole life story too. They didn't just tell, like, she wasn't just a trans character in Orange is the New Black. They did her life story, like her transition. And actually the reason that she went to jail, and in the story, the reason that she went to jail was because she used credit cards to pay for her she did identity theft to get credit cards so she could pay for her gender affirming surgery.
Oh wow.
And that's how she got in trouble and went to jail. So she went to jail specifically because of what she was doing to get her medically necessary treatment. So and that's like such a true story. I mean, there's so many people who do stuff like that, who put their lives at risk and do like different kinds of work, you know, risk sometimes their freedom, like Laverne Cox did and her character did, you know, just to get treatment. Anyway, sorry.
That's okay. I was going on with Cox also played Dr. Frankenfurter in the remake of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, a role which was originally played by a man, and seemed to use the idea of a man dressing in feminine clothing as a joke, thus insulting trans women, I believe.
It's like, yeah. You know, nothing against the remake. I saw it. It was okay. I mean, I have to admit, though, I'm a little bit older. You know, I'm from an older generation. And, like, to me, when Rocky Horror Picture came out, like, I know that now it's problematic. But when it came out, it was so radical. And it was like seeing something like that, like in 1979, was just like amazing, you know? And then the way it stayed around forever. And it's like, it really opened a lot of doors, you know? Like now maybe it's time to close those doors, to open some more doors. But I loved it, you know? I have to admit, I loved it. And it's like, I mean, I know it is problematic now, but that's because that's because we've grown, you know. Back then it was like, oh my god, people were just like, you know, either you loved it or you hated it, you know. And if you went and you thought it was funny, it was actually giving you a chance to learn something. You were actually getting a chance to be taught through comedy something about a lifestyle and also about an identity that you don't know anything about. So
right. Now, my opinion of the remake anyway, it was more appropriate to cast a trans woman in this role.
Yeah.
And it helped that all the characters referred to Cox's character as she, her, whereas in the original, they referred to the doctor as he, him. So this change demonstrated that Cox is a woman, not a man dressed as a woman.
Right.
However, at least to me, it was discomforting to hear Cox refer to herself as a transvestite, because that's a term typically used as a derogatory slur against trans women.
Yeah. So, I don't know. You know, we had, you weren't on for this show, but three shows back, we had Kira on, you know, Jean's friend Kira. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, Kira ran the Friday night support group for trans women over at the Q Center. And Kira uses those words. I mean, she still uses the word transsexual. And she claims that, you know, I mean, she says that it's the most appropriate word to describe who she is. And, you know, she's just from that generation. That's just like how people talked back then. So,
yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But anyway, it's also important to not only cast trans actors, but also to cast them in roles that portray trans people in a positive and accurate manner. So, like, trans actress Nicole Maines plays, I'm not sure if it's Nia Nall or Nia Nall, also known as Dreamer on Supergirl, the first transgender actor, or sorry, first transgender superhero on television.
Oh my gosh, Supergirl is transgender?
No, there's a transgender superhero on the show.
Oh, cool. Oh, you're giving me like all this great stuff to put in my Netflix queue.
Yeah.
This is awesome. Yeah, I've been seeing like some of the ads for Supergirl. I had no idea there was a trans character.
Season 4? Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, she's in season 4, which I will note, I have not seen season 4 myself. So I can't comment too much on that. However, my partner has seen that season, and their critique of it, I would like to note, is they felt like this character, like the whole thing about her character was just she was trans, and everything about this character had to do with her transness. And yeah, it felt more like a token trans character, honestly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they felt that, you know, a better way to handle that might have been to normalize her character a bit more and just have her be a superhero who just happened to be trans, you know, and not make it like her whole character is just she's trans.
Mm-hmm.
Another character that I should probably put in this paper, because we also talked about this and it's on a similar subject. There's also a trans character on the anime My Hero Academia. And the one downside is this character is a villain. That part I don't like as much. I think I prefer mm-hmm. she was a hero. But what we like about the way that they portrayed this character is the fact that she was trans wasn't even talked about all that much. Like, there's maybe a couple instances where someone refers to her as he, and her friends will correct them and be like, no, she, you know. But other than that, the fact that she's trans is never even really talked about. So it's like, it's just normal that she's trans. It's normal that her friends correct anyone who misgenders her. And other than that, she's just a character who happens to be trans.
Oh, that's so cool. That's like the actress that, the playwright we had on a couple shows back. And that's exactly what she said about her writing. She was like, she wants to get to a point where, like, you know, writing in a trans character is just like no big deal. Like, you know, it's not even important.
Yeah, that's what my partner and I were talking about, that we think we should see more of in trans representation. You know, we should just see characters who just happen to be trans, and it's not like their whole thing is they're trans.
That's so cool.
Yeah. It's a way of like normalizing it and showing people that we're normal people, you know. We're not that much different than everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, Sense8, a show written that's written by the transgender Wachowski sisters, and it features a trans actress, Jamie Clayton, as the trans lesbian character, Nomi. And so, you know, both these characters, they tackle real issues that trans people face, such as transitioning, discrimination, being misgendered, and fighting to be recognized for who they really are. But at the same time, they're also portrayed as ordinary people with extraordinary abilities, making them both admirable and relatable characters.
Wow, that's so cool. I didn't know that the Wachowski sisters did it. That's so cool.
Yeah, and I think that's why they wrote that character so well, is because, you know, you've got a trans character written by trans women.
The Wachowski sisters are so interesting. I mean, it's like they both transitioned, and it's like, I'm just like, okay, well, that's what happened. They both were transgender. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
They're actually really cute. I've seen pictures of them. Like,
oh, I know.
It's nice having a lot of money, you know.
Oh, right. Yeah. So anyway, while it is preferable to cast trans actors in trans roles, it can also be permissible to cast cis people in these roles, as long as the actor is the same gender as the identified gender of the trans character. So, for example, cis actress Felicity Huffman underwent voice coaching to play a trans woman in the movie Transamerica. And a cis woman playing a trans woman does help demonstrate that trans women are women.
She did a good job in that. I felt like, you know, I mean, she was a good trans character, I have to admit. It's like, I was doing an interview. I'm so embarrassed to say this that I'm not going to say who it was, but I was doing an interview recently with someone, and I thought that they were transgender. Like, for half of the interview, I thought they were transgender. And so I asked them to tell me about their transgender transition story. And like, at first they said like, oh, I'm sorry, I don't think I heard that. Can you say that again? And then I said it again. And then they're like, oh, I'm not transgender. And I was like, oh my God, I was so embarrassed, because thought they were transgender and they weren't. And it's like, you know, Felicity Huffman did a great job in Transamerica. I mean, I think that she kind of had that same sort of skill. Like, I mean, she was someone who she definitely looked like she might be somebody that you might suspect as trans. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like from that generation, because that was back in the, wasn't that in the 80s they made Trans America? Or
oh,
the
90s? No, it was, I think, in the late 90s or early 2000s.
Yeah, it was pretty good, though. I mean, it was, like, it was real, you know? That was, like, how it really was back then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I thought she did a really good job of portraying this trans woman and, you know, making it clear that she was a woman, you know? Right. It wasn't a man dressed as a woman. But it should be noted, though, and this could be because of how old the movie is, I read multiple interviews and reviews referring to this movie that incorrectly refer to Huffman's character as a man. You know, I don't
know. Yeah.
She's clearly a woman. However, when cis actress Hilary Swank played a trans man in Boys Don't Cry, you know, a movie based on a real life hate crime against a trans man, she was criticized for perpetuating the image that trans men are really women. And the same thing almost happened when cis actress Scarlett Johansson announced that she would play Dante Tex Gill, a real-life crime kingpin who was also a trans man, in her upcoming movie, Rub and Tug.
There was a trans man in Boys Don't Cry?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Boys Don't Cry. It was about the real-life murder of a trans man. I think his name was Brandon Tina. So he was murdered for being trans.
What movie am I? Oh, wow, the Brandon Tinas. Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, when we did, I think you were with us when we did the Transgender Day of Remembrance, like one of the first, maybe you weren't with us, maybe it was Jane, but we interviewed the person who started Transgender Day of Remembrance. And she was talking about how, like, you know, it was right when Brandatina was murdered. And that was, like, one of the, I mean, the Trans Day of Remembrance was actually started, I guess, you know, pretty soon after Brandatina was murdered.
Oh, wow.
I mean, she definitely knew, you know, the story and talked about it. I wonder how many people today, like, even in the queer community, remember or know who Brandatina is?
I mean, I do because I know the movie Boys Don't Cry.
Because of the movie, right.
Yeah. But yeah, it was disappointing to me that they had this cis woman play a trans man. You know, they really should have had a man play him. At least a cis man, but ideally a trans man.
Yeah, no, that was a good movie. That was a really good movie.
Yeah, just poor choice of actor.
Yeah.
And same with, you know, I know we talked about the whole Scarlett Johansson thing on this show at least a couple times, but...
Oh, yeah, that was pretty recent.
Yeah, yeah, that was like last year, you know. She was criticized for attempting to play a man when the role should have been played by a man, ideally a trans man. So she just ended up dropping the project altogether. I really think she should have, you know, made the movie, but just cast a trans man in that role.
Yeah.
Or if not a trans man, get a cis man. It is just not appropriate for a woman to play a man.
Yeah. I mean, So I'm going to take a position that's a little controversial, and I know that, like, a lot of people won't agree with me, and I might even get, like, some nasty emails, but it's acting. You know, like, when you are an actor, you might play all kinds of roles, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't cast trans people in trans roles, but I'm also saying that it's acting, and it's by definition about playing characters that you're not. So, I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, yeah, that is true. It's just, I think that, you know, when you have someone of the opposite gender, you know, in that role, like a woman playing a man or a man playing a woman, it perpetuates this whole idea that, oh, trans women are really men, trans men are really women, because they see a cis person of the opposite gender in that role.
Yeah.
So another recent famous example of this type of miscasting was in the movie The Danish Girl. The story of this movie also holds many problems for how trans people are portrayed. The movie was supposed to be based on the life of artist Lily Elba, who was one of the first trans people to receive gender confirmation surgery.
Yeah,
like,
she had like she actually had a uterus. Like they actually this was in the '20s, and they actually tried to put a uterus in her, and that's actually what killed her.
Yeah, because her body rejected the uterus.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, much of the story.
But they didn't know about organs. I mean, if they tried to put a pancreas in her or a kidney, she would have died of that too.
That's true.
They didn't understand organs, like that you have. I mean, each one has its own unique kind of identity that you have to give medication so the body doesn't reject it.
Exactly. So, unfortunately, you know, much of the story in the movie is inaccurate and fabricated compared to the real story of Lily Alba. The biggest problem with the film is that it casts Eddie Redmayne, a cis male actor, as this trans woman, which, like I said, it perpetuates this stigma that trans women are really men. And I mean, Redmayne did research Lily, and he talked with Lana Wachowski to prep for the role, but I just don't think he can fully grasp what it's like to be a woman, and thus he kind of came across as a caricature of femininity rather than an actual woman. And what's even weirder is there was a trans woman in the cast who was like cast as a cis female nurse in this movie. So why didn't she or another trans woman play Lily? It just doesn't make sense. Here's where I get into my problems with this movie. The way in which Lily begins to transition in this movie has also been compared to forced feminization erotica, as Lily is coaxed into dressing up as a woman for a painting, which, you know, it's perpetuating this myth that being trans is a sexual fetish. But it should also be noted that it appears historically accurate that Lily did begin her transition by dressing up as a woman for her wife's paintings. And the film also attempts to convey that Lily was already trans long before she ever dressed up for the paintings, which is probably true in real life.
Yeah.
Another positive is that the film does display some accuracies of the transgender experience, you know, such as dysphoria and being stared at by men. But one of my biggest problems was the way the characters talk about Lily makes it sound as though she has like dissociative identity disorder, which is again adding to the stigma that being trans is a mental illness. But it also does appear that Lily and Gerda did speak that way about the situation in real life. And another major criticism that this movie has received is the story was largely an inaccurate portrayal of Lily and Gerda's lives. Perhaps most notably, Gerda was portrayed as a heterosexual woman who resented Lily's transition. But in reality, Gerda was apparently a bisexual who was known for painting lesbian erotica. And she seemed to completely accept Lily's gender identity. So their relationship only disintegrated after their marriage was annulled, when Lily became legally recognized as a woman.
Yeah.
And same-sex marriage was illegal at that time.
That actually is just like, I mean, that's the way a lot of marriages go now too. I mean, including friends of mine, you know, it's like, that's actually not at all, that's very accurate for what you just described is very accurate for what actually happens in a lot of trans marriages.
Yeah. What is interestingly accurate, though, is Lily is portrayed as bisexual in the film, which she was in real life. There was a fictional man in the movie that Lily was seeing who was, after she transitioned, it was described that he was not attracted to Lily because he's homosexual. So at least on the positive side, that implies that she's a real woman. But then on the downside, it also perpetuates the myth that trans women have to transition in order to be a real woman, and they're not a real woman until after they transition.
Right. Yeah, that's like, yeah, that's, it's such a shame too, because I mean, trans women are just, I think that trans women, like when they first start transitioning, are like so amazingly beautiful. They're like, in some ways, it's like, because they're people who are just getting a chance finally to be who they are and who they want to be. So like when trans women first transition, they just have this glow that like, it's that glow of freedom, you know? And it's like, to me, that's so beautiful. I mean, you shouldn't have to consider someone a woman when they've had surgery. I mean, and we don't. Legally in Oregon, you can change your gender identity And you don't have to have surgery to change your gender identity. You just,
exactly.
It's very easy to change your gender identity. I mean, like you might be taking hormones, or I don't even think you have to take hormones to change your gender identity. And it's, you know, it's just reflective of what your gender is. That's all.
Yeah. Know? Really, all you need to be trans is to just identify as a different gender than the one you were assigned at birth. That's it.
Oh my God, we've only got 10 minutes left. I can't believe how fast this time has gone. I don't know if we're going to get through your whole paper, Nicolette.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm like maybe halfway through this.
We're going to have to do this as a two-parter.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to make sure we had a whole hour, but yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess we can try picking this up again for the next show. Because, yeah, I've got, I was just talking about trans actors. Now I've got like this whole two or three pages talking about trans characters in fiction.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
It's hard to like, because, I mean, the stuff you're bringing up is just like, it's just so interesting. I mean, it's enough material to talk about like for a while, because these characters, like each time you take a transgender person and put them in the media, like you're really creating like new cultural space that's never been created before.
Right.
And it's, I mean, each one of those is like worth discussion, you know, like Supergirl. I mean, I haven't even seen Supergirl. So it's like, I'm still looking forward to this now that I'm learning about it from you.
I know. I really need to catch up. I'm only on like season two right now, so I need to catch up and see season four so I can see the first transgender superhero on TV. That is really cool.
So the trans character like doesn't show up until season four?
Yeah, she doesn't show up till season four.
And what's her superpower?
So she has telepathy.
Oh, that's good.
Like some sort of a laser weapon. Yeah, but she has telepathy.
Oh, wow. What do you think about that, Nicola? Do you think that that's a good character? I mean, what would... So let's say you had a trans or a non-binary superhero. What power would your superhero have?
I mean, there's definitely a lot of useful superpowers I can conceive. I personally really wish that I could teleport.
Teleport. Like, ooh, that's a good
life,
one.
I really wish that I could teleport, but even like as a superhero, that would be such a useful power.
I think it would be really cool if you had like a superhero who could like change genders, like,
right?
You know, just like by spinning around. Yeah, it'd be like a non-binary superhero, or maybe not. I don't know. Just some kind of gender fluid. It'd be a gender fluid.
Yeah, gender fluid, because gender fluid is literally when you change genders, you know, depending on how you're feeling that day or whatever. So
yeah,
it would literally be a gender fluid superhero. That would be so cool.
That would be really cool, yeah. And then they'd have to have something else too, like, you know, they could like shoot fire out of their nose or something. I don't know.
Or they could like, they could be like Beast Boy and change into any animal that they want.
Ooh, that's good. Just be a
little shapeshifter.
Oh, a shapeshifter. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Somebody who's gender, really right. Yeah. No, that would be really cool. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it's been so interesting talking about your paper. I mean, so far tonight, we've gone from like the 80s, you know, up through the 21st century. And it sounds like trans characters have really evolved in some ways. But what are some of the things that, like, from the first half of your paper that you saw are sort of constants? Like, it seems like there's constantly been this problem with cis people playing trans characters, like, all the way from the 80s through, like, today almost.
Yeah, I think that has been a consistent problem, you know, having cis actors play trans characters, and especially when it's someone of the opposite gender. You know, I think that is a huge, huge problem. And we're going to talk about this more in the second half, because I talk about this more in my paper. But I think, you know, also how trans characters are portrayed is very, very important. Addressing trans issues, I think you have to go about it very carefully. And I think that's why, you know, like Sense8, you know, it was written by trans women. And I think that's, you know, a big reason why they did such a good job of portraying this trans woman character. Mm-hmm. And maybe if they had, you know, worked on Supergirl, they could have written that character even better. But apparently, you know, she's been well received from what I've read.
And we haven't even gotten into talking about representations of trans people of color.
Oh, definitely. And unfortunately, I haven't seen a whole lot of representation of that other than like Laverne Cox.
Right. You know,
there aren't a whole lot of trans people of color in the media these days either.
I know. And it's like, where does Laverne Cox get her fame as an actress? Yeah. It's on Actually, a show about somebody who's in prison.
Yeah, I think Angelica Ross, if I remember right, she was one of the other women that I talked about. And I think she is also a trans woman of color as well.
Yeah.
And that's great that she's playing a cis woman on her show. I think, you know, it is just fantastic when trans actors are playing cis characters.
It's, yeah. Wow.
It's really progressive.
Well, thanks for bringing us on this journey tonight through, you know, the first half of representations of trans folks in media. Does your paper go at all into binary or non-binary, or is it mostly just talking about trans?
I mean, it's mostly talking about binary trans people, but right in the next paragraph, actually, that I was going to get to, I address the issue of non-binary. But again, that's a whole nother discussion. We'll definitely have to talk about that on the next show.
That's going to be great. I'm looking forward to it so much.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Nicolette, for sharing all of that, you know, research that you've been doing. That's really great. Where are you taking that class at? Is that at PSU?
Yeah, that's at PSU.
Oh, that's cool. Wow. Yeah, they've got a really great program over there. They've got like a, don't they have like a whole queer studies department?
They do.
Yeah, that's so cool. Wonderful. Well, you're listening to Trans Positive PDX here on KBOO Community Radio. Is there anything else you want to share before we go tonight, Nicolette?
I think we covered everything, but I do want to remind people to please stay safe and also have a great Pride Month, at least to the best of your ability.
And, you know, and I think that we're all saying, even though by the time you hear this, it's going to be almost 3 weeks since it's happened, but we all want justice for George Floyd and for all trans people too who are killed by the police, because we know what happens.
Yeah, especially Tony to McDade. Trans people.
I'm sorry, can you say his name again?
Tony McDade.
Tony McDade. Justice for Tony McDade. So. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for joining us here on Transpositive. My name is Emma, and I use she and her pronouns.
And my name is Nicolette, and I use and them pronouns.
And thank you so much, Nicolette. That was really great. And we'll see you all in 2 weeks.
All right. See you soon. Have a good night.
Thank you. Have a good night. Hi, this is Emma. So we have a few minutes left in the show, so I would just like to share with you the story of the murder of Tony McDade. And this is a story that was written in Mother Jones magazine. And it's about the death of black transgender man, Tony McDade, who was killed by the police the same week that George Floyd was. On Wednesday night, while Minneapolis burned, several dozen mourners held a candlelight vigil in Tallahassee, Florida, for Tony McDade. McDade, a black transmasculine person, was shot and killed by police on Wednesday morning. The circumstances surrounding McDade's death are still murky. Tallahassee police say McDade was a suspect in a fatal stabbing that occurred shortly before his death. Police say he was armed with a handgun, and he made a move consistent with using a firearm against an officer, an eyewitness told the local media. That police never tried to de-escalate the situation. I walk down this way. As soon as I get around the curve, I just hear shots, Clifford Butler told WFSU. I see McDade right behind the tree. But I see him, the officer, just jump out of the car, swing the door open, and just start shooting. Butler says he never heard the officer who fired shots give any warning beforehand. I never heard, get down and freeze, I'm an officer. Nothing. I just heard the shots, Butler said. The police have not released the name of the officer involved, thanks to a Florida law that allows officers involved in shootings to be classified as victims to protect their privacy. But witnesses say that he was white. Tony was a queer black man who was gunned down by law enforcement, says Gina Duncan, Director of Transgender Equality for Equality Florida, a statewide LGBTQ advocacy organization.
Nothing can erase that. Talking about Tony's earlier brushes with law should not diminish the humanity of this person being dead, and certainly shouldn't diminish the fact that society failed Tony. Tony was calling out for help, and society failed Tony. McDade's death comes on the heels of high-profile police deaths of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd, who were killed in police encounters in Louisville and Minneapolis, respectively, as well as multiple local police shootings that have received less media attention. Since March, Tallahassee police have fatally shot 3 people, all of whom were black. The most recent shooting of a 69-year-old man named Wilbon Woodard occurred just a week prior to McDade's death. On March 20th, 31-year-old Michael Johnson was shot to death by Officer Zachary Jones, who was also involved in the shooting death of a white man in 2015. Jones was later cleared of wrongdoing by a grand jury. Today's tragic loss of life affects our entire community. This comes on the heels of disturbing events around our nation that we will not ignore, Tallahassee Mayor John Daley tweeted on Wednesday in response to McDade's death. The Tallahassee Police Department has committed to a thorough investigation of the events surrounding today's murder and officer-involved shooting, and we are asking the public to share any information they have about the incident with the police. Florida is also the epicenter of anti-transgender violence over the past 2 years. Last year, the American Medical Association deemed a surge in the murder of transgender people an epidemic. The vast majority of the victims are transgender women of color. Of the 52 reported murders of transgender or gender nonconforming people in the past 2 years, 1 in 7 were in Florida. What brings Tony McDade's murder so close to home is that this is a national pandemic, Duncan says. We have not only COVID-19 impacting our nation, but also the virus of institutional racism. No matter what your gender, no matter how you identify, we still have this pervasive culture of Black Americans suffering under overt discrimination by law enforcement. And when you look at the big picture, Tony McDade's shooting is a symptom of that national virus that we're dealing with as a country. So again, that was about the death of Tony McDade, who was a black, queer, transgender man who was killed by the Florida police the same week as George Floyd. And that was written by Laura Thompson from Mother Jones magazine. So thanks again for listening to Trans Positive, and we will see you in 2 weeks. Thanks so much, and have a great night. Hi, this is Emma. We'll be right back.
Portland.